525, your news time. A Widener University law professor offers analysis on the Delaware case of the 23-year-old woman in a persistent vegetative state following a heroin overdose in August of 2006. A court awarded guardianship of Lauren Richardson to her mother, Edith Towers, who insists her daughter did not wish to live that way if it ever happened. But the father, divorced from the mother, wants to give his daughter a chance to live longer and maybe partially recover. He's fighting the court order that could lead doctors to yank the feeding tube. Well, Thad Pope, professor with Widener University's Health Law Institute, specializing in end-of-life issues, you've been looking at this case a little bit, and what is your sense as to whether the father would have any grounds for a reversal?
Obviously, you know, she can't make the decisions for herself, and there has to be a substitute decision maker appointed. And the standard is to appoint the substitute decision maker who will best decide what the patient herself would have wanted to decide. And as you noted, the lower court found that the mother seems to be acting as the daughter would have acted for herself if she could. And it does seem unlikely that the father will be able to have that reversed.
Now, could you raise the issue if this young woman fell into her vegetative state as a result of a heroin overdose, that perhaps when this daughter was communicating with her mother, that she might have been impaired to the point where she was not thinking with the full depth of her mental capacity?
Well, it's not, I guess it's unclear from the court's opinion exactly when the oral statements that the mother testified about were made, right? And so all you have, the only evidence in the case, is some evidence from the mother, some evidence from an uncle. These are prior oral statements that the daughter made that were to the effect that if I were ever in a state like that, I wouldn't want to be in a state like that. And the father had some other evidence. And the court listened to that and decided that the mother's evidence was clear and convincing, which is the standard, which is a little bit higher than your regular preponderance of the evidence standard in civil cases, but a little bit below beyond a reasonable doubt that you have in criminal cases.
Now, if a woman had a written statement, some kind of a will, that would trump everything, but it's unlikely a young woman in her 20s would have such a thing.
Right, and even people way above their 20s, most people don't have advance directives or living wills. And that's absolutely right. It's just unlikely that an appellate court is going to second guess the trial judge. He was there. He saw the witnesses. He listened to the witnesses in his courtroom and made these judgments as to credibility and what evidence was convincing. And an appellate court doesn't have that access, and they're going to be unlikely to second-guess the trial judge.
Inevitably, people draw parallels to the Schiavo case in Florida. Obviously, the law in Florida does not apply in Delaware, I guess. But do you see any parallels?
Obviously, the law doesn't apply, but the law happens to be very, very similar. There's obviously many parallels, because the dispute is not about the law. The dispute is just about the evidence. Who is speaking on behalf of the patient? There it was the parents versus the husband. Here it's the two parents. And there, Michael, the husband, all he had was a couple oral statements from Terry. And the court there held that that was clear and convincing. Appellate courts affirmed that time and time again. And there, of course, you had the alleged financial conflict of interest. And so you'd think if that was clear and convincing there, here the evidence is perhaps at least as strong as it was there, such that this evidence is also clear and convincing.
Okay, well clearly we have to go now. We have traffic time, but sobering discussion. Thad Pope from Widener University's Delaware Law School, thank you.
Thanks, Alan.